joining me to discuss Labour's party politics for business and for the economy is the Shadow Business Minister, Bill Esterson. Bill, very good morning to you. Let's kick off immediately. Can you call Labour the party of business?
Good morning, Nick. Well, yes, absolutely, because we are the party of the worker, as the name says. But a high-pay economy is good for business too, because if workers are well paid, they've got the money to buy the goods and services that business produces. And that is very much the agenda of investment that we talked about this week. And you saw it with what the Shadow Chancellor, John McDonnell, said. You saw it with what my boss, Rebecca Long-Bailey, said in her speech as well. And you're putting the investment into infrastructure and skills that business needs is very much underpinning our approach. And we need the transport infrastructure around the country, in the north of England, where I'm a member of parliament. We need the skills base. We need to invest in technical and intermediate and advanced skills.
Sure.
And
I mean, it's a very connected picture. But you mentioned the high pay economy. One of the factors will be this new, possibly the most eye catching policy that was put out on business at the conference. This was about compulsory employee share ownership, where companies more than 250 employees would have to gradually hand over 10% of their equity to workers. Now, it does look more as though this is about paying workers more rather than necessarily a sort of a standard share ownership scheme. But first of all, what problem is this actually intended to solve?
And paying workers more is a part of it. £500 more a year for workers through dividends, again, is about improving their prosperity on the one hand and improving the impact on the economy on the other. That is absolutely right. But inclusive ownership funds are looking at good practice around the world and boosting productivity, because we've seen productivity fall in this country, or fall behind in this country, to be entirely accurate, for very many years. And since the financial crisis, we've fallen further behind other countries. So, there are many things that are needed to see greater investment in new technology that drives productivity.
Sure, worker
engagement is a big part of this. And the studies that have been carried out in the United States, where 14.4 million workers take part in the American version of inclusive ownership funds, has shown higher productivity. The German employee ownership system again sees greater engagement and productivity as a result. And the cooperative movement is another way of looking at this. We only have 2% of our businesses as co-ops in this country. In France, in Holland, in Scandinavia, in New Zealand, the figure is something like 5 to 10%. Germany has four times as many. France has six times as many co-ops. So there's a very different approach to employee engagement, and I think
the
IMF actually says this very well.
Sure, they say that, but is forcing businesses down this route the right way to go?
Economies with free collective bargaining with high pay are more productive, are more successful. I mean, that's the IMF saying it, not us. So we're looking at the evidence and looking at what's going to make a difference to the economy as a whole and to benefit business as well as workers and public services.
But again, that question, is forcing businesses down this route the best way to go about this? Because it feels as though it effectively feels like you're opening up a new battlefield between the Treasury, if you were in charge, and a horde of corporate accountants who'd be looking to get around this. I mean, my cynical brain, I was already coming up with ways of splitting a business into 250 employee subsidiaries and things like this. I mean, isn't it just going to be more complicated, more rules to battle through?
Well, I think avoidance is one of the challenges in our economy and in our corporate system, whether it's tax or anything else. And I think time is moving on from the days where large corporates behave in that way, and frankly, where lots of people working in large corporates want to behave in that way. I think there is a real appetite amongst the public, including many people who work in the private sector, large and small, for a different way of running businesses. Now, I spoke to a number of people in senior roles in the corporate sector, in business representative groups in particular, during the week, and yes, we did get businesses saying they weren't convinced, but I also had people saying actually they quite like this because their experience of working with companies elsewhere in the world where this is much more commonplace is very positive because they see the benefits of the workforce engaging with management. We are very much behind the times, and it's part of the challenge that we have in raising productivity. So it's very much driven by the economic imperative here, as well as by improving the prosperity of workers.
Why a cap on dividends? So everything above £500 goes to the Treasury. That feels like an additional tax on business, and particularly on shareholders on investment.
Yeah, and it is linked to raising revenue that's needed, and business needs the improvements in infrastructure and skills that I mentioned at the start. But they're not going to happen without them being paid for. So it's part of the contribution needed by the corporate sector to boost the overall conditions for raising productivity. I mean, we have an appallingly bad transport system in this country, out of London and the immediate southeast very often, and apart from the main railway lines. But so it's partly contributing to that. So workers do get this increase of £500, and over and above that, the money goes to the Exchequer.
Sure, but you're effectively asking businesses, when they want to give dividends to their shareholders to keep them sweet, to effectively choose to give more tax to the Exchequer. Now, call me a cynic, but businesses are not in the habit of choosing to give more tax than they have to. Surely you'd see more businesses just trying to get around it in different ways. I can't see this as something which businesses will voluntarily give more to.
Well, it won't be voluntary, as you'd already pointed out, I think. But
sure, but they are the ones who choose the level of their dividend.
That's true, although it's 6 o'clock in the morning, so let's get our accounting right here. But because corporation tax is the alternative, and we have plans.
You're also
raising corporation tax, as you will remind me, from the manifesto last year, which is back to the 26% that we had 8 years ago, when we were in office, still one of the lowest in the G8, and you know, it is essential that we pay for skills, for transport, for broadband, for public services that people in the private sector need just as much as anybody else.
But I mean, I can hear the sort of the slightly more right wing free markets economists amongst our audience arguing that since the corporation tax level has come down, tax receipts have gone up. I mean, would this not be a crimping effect on what the Exchequer was actually bringing in?
No, I don't accept that, and we also are planning to reintroduce the small companies rate for profits up to 300,000. So, this is for larger profits, and it is essential that we have a contributory effect. And there are other changes in our tax plans. Yeah, we recognise business rates doesn't work in the high street, for example. We recognise, and I hope we can get on to talk about our plans for town centres and high streets, because there's another real problem for business as well as for society there. We recognise we've got to have an overhaul of the tax system, but unless we're able to raise additional sums, then we're unable to deliver the infrastructure and the backdrop that government as a partner should be providing for business as well as for wider society. And you know, we still have a lower tax base than other parts of the world, but we're still seeing living standards, you know, significantly down. We're still seeing productivity down. So I'm afraid that I don't accept the argument that the lower tax system has delivered for the people of this country. And, you know, when the Prime Minister talks about an even lower corporation tax system, as she did, you'll forgive me whether it was a day yesterday or the day before yesterday, but threatening to compete with the European Union from 21 miles away by having lower corporation tax is a race to the bottom that can only be paid for by lower wages and poorer public services, and that is not a sensible way forward. I would say we have to compete around the world on the basis of quality. We have to compete on the basis of being a productive economy, in just the same way as businesses. And I ran a business 15 years, Nick. I always learned that you compete on the basis of quality, you compete on the basis of your existing relationships, as well as looking for new markets. That's a successful model. When you start cutting corners and cutting costs on a race to the bottom, there's always going to be more that you've got to cut. And in the end, how do we compete with China, with India, with many developing countries, with far more people who are on much lower wages? You know, we just can't compete on a low-wage economy, which is what the Liam Foxes and Jacob Rees-Mogg of this world want us to do. It has to be on the basis of a high-skill, high-wage economy. And that's not going to happen by ever lower corporate taxes.
On Jazz FM, this is The Business Breakfast.
Where it is 20 minutes past six. I'm Nick Howard. Thank you very much indeed for joining me. And with me is the Shadow Business Minister, Bill Esterson. Bill, thank you very much again for joining us on the programme this morning. If we can turn to Brexit now. In the next weeks, months, Theresa May will be presenting her deal to the Parliament, to the Commons. What will Labour do if that deal isn't one that you like? Will you vote against her?
Well, I think it's highly likely we'll be voting down the deal that comes back. I mean, whatever's left of Chequers, and I'm not sure there'll be an awful lot left of it, given that I can't find anybody apart from the Prime Minister who seems to support it anymore. I think we'll almost certainly vote it down and push for a general election, because I just don't see how the government can stay credibly in office.
If you vote that down, then you'll be voting with Jacob Rees-Mogg, with Boris Johnson, and I mean the European Parliament. Unless they extend Article 50, this will be a no deal situation. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm not going to predict that Jacob Rees-Mogg and Boris Johnson are going to be voting with this. But look, if a deal comes forward that doesn't support the economy, jobs, workers' rights, environmental and consumer standards, that doesn't honour the Good Friday Agreement, that doesn't ensure that we have common standards and regulations with the European Union, that doesn't ensure we're in a new customs union to make sure that we have frictionless trade and that we have a new agreement with the single market, then we're not going to support it, because we've set out what our policy is since the last general election. And Jeremy Corbyn, actually, in his speech on Wednesday, offered the Prime Minister a way forward, which is if she can move past some of her red lines, you know, we can reach agreement with her and support a proposal. But that doesn't seem to be what she's coming forward with. So, you know, unless she changes their mind and looks at what we're saying. By the way, it's not what we're saying so much as, again, looking at evidence. This is what the CBI is saying. This is what the TUC is saying. Actually, this is what business as a whole is saying, with a few exceptions. And you know, I think she should listen to business.
But in terms of the time that we have left, unless, as I say, so the European Parliament has said that if a deal gets voted down there, there just isn't enough time to negotiate new deals, to have an election, to have another referendum. Unless they extend Article 50, it would mean, and that would mean getting a vote in all 27 European capitals and some of the regional parliaments as well, it would mean a no deal cliff edge, and that would harden the border in Northern Ireland, and it would, you know, be terrible for business as well. Would that be something that you would effectively be voting for?
No, I mean, it would be an absolute disaster if the Conservatives, who want a cliff edge no deal, get their way. I mean, you mentioned Rees-Mogg and Johnson, and you know there's the ERG, the European Reform Group. That's the agenda that they are pursuing. I think they've always wanted a no deal Brexit because it enables them to indulge this fantasy that we don't need a relationship with our closest neighbours and our biggest trading partner. Their ideal is this low wage, low skill, deregulated Singapore of the North Atlantic. I mean, I think that'd be a disaster for this country. I think it'd be disastrous for most businesses as well. We trade on the basis of high standards in this country, and our successful businesses do so on that basis. No, and I think Parliament has to take control of the situation. So, Parliament can't just accept some bad deal on the basis that there's an awful threat hanging over us. I think Parliament's got to take control, say no to a bad deal, and say, right, we're now going to put forward an alternative. You know, Jeremy Corbyn offered this on Wednesday, and, I think listening to some in the Conservative Party, I think if you listen to Nicky Morgan or Anna Soubry or Dominic Grieve, I think some of their ideas are closer to us. So I think it's about talking to some of that part of the Conservative Party.
He was in Brussels yesterday. He was speaking to Michel Barnier. Did he present Labour's version of what a Brexit deal would look like? Do you know whether the EU would accept it?
Jeremy Corbyn, you're quite right, and Keir Starmer were in Brussels yesterday. They were honouring our colleague Joe Cox's memory by naming a square in Brussels after her. And they had a very successful meeting. I can't say exactly what was agreed, but the fact that they were having the discussion, I think, is extremely good news. I think it's exactly what should be happening. We should be saying, look, there is an alternative way here. And actually, of course, it's in the interests of the members of the European Union as well to reach agreement that ensures a close relationship. And that's the key to this. There has to be a close relationship between the UK and the EU after Brexit. That's what we're pushing for. And I think actually most of the European Union want this as well.
Sure.
And so rather than focusing on the too much of the mechanics, I think, yeah, let's keep the end in mind here and work back from it.
But this is the thing. If there is a Labour deal which you have, a Brexit agreement that the EU is willing to sign up for, that would be, a key piece of information. Are you saying that they're more likely to go with a Labour deal? Is that something that, that they would agree on?
Yeah, because the negotiators have, I mean, Barnier and Guy Verhofstadt and European governments have all made clear from day one that we can either have a deal very similar to what we have now, where we're maintaining, in the Prime Minister's words, in David Davis's words at the time, the exact same benefits, or a completely distant one with divergence. There isn't an in-between position, which is the problem with the Prime Minister's position. So, we're arguing for that close relationship. We're arguing for a new customs union to support the supply chains in this country, to support our food industry, to support our pharmaceuticals industry and enable people to get medicines. And we're also arguing for that close new deal with the single market that is in the interest of businesses and workers in the UK. That is possible. We know that there is an appetite in the European Union for a negotiation on that basis.
Yes, but I mean the EU have already suggested that within your agreement, there's still the same kind of cherry picking that the Prime Minister has been accused of, a splitting of the four indivisible freedoms in terms of what that single market access would look like. All I'm trying to get a sense of is whether if Labour was in power tomorrow, a Brexit deal could be done in the time that we have left.
Well, well, we're not going to be in power tomorrow. I want a general election, both to deal with Brexit, but also to deal with the underlying weaknesses in the economy that I'm afraid 8 years of constant cuts have taken us in totally
different
direction.
Sure, but the question.
But look, the question of whether we can do a deal. That's why Jeremy and Keir were having those discussions with Michel Barnier yesterday. Now, I also think a general election is unlikely. I don't think the Conservatives or DUP are going to vote for one. Although I might want them. So we've got to look at the parliamentary system and what's achievable. And I think it is possible for Parliament to get to that position as well, where we're mandating the current government to negotiate on that basis, which is a different analysis. There are lots of if, buts and maybes here, Nick. What we've got to try and do is get to the position of an agreement. And I think the other side of it that we haven't talked about yet is transition, because we'll need an in-principle outline agreement. And I think the only one is the one that...
You think an election is unlikely. You've also committed as a party now to a second referendum if you can't get that election. If you are pushing for that then, what would the terms of that be? What would be on that ballot paper?
Well, we've committed to pushing for a general election, if Parliament has voted down the deal, which I think is likely, and we've committed to keeping all options on the table, including a further people's vote, with a variety of options. I think we are a very long way from that point. So, tempting though it is to investigate that with you, I'll resist the temptation at the moment. I think the point is we need to get to a stage where Parliament is pushing a close arrangement with the European Union that's in the interests of the economy, jobs, and the very high environmental and consumer standards we have now.
Shadow Minister, before I let you go, the Conservatives had their own annual conference this weekend. Now, it does look as though it will be a make or break one for the Prime Minister. What would you be hoping will happen?
I can have my wish list of hoping that that sanity breaks out right across the Conservative Party. I think this is rather unlikely, but they accept that something very similar to what we've just been talking about, mandate the Prime Minister to come back and accept Jeremy Corbyn's offer of a close arrangement with the European Union. Sadly, I think that's rather unlikely because they're dominated as a party, certainly at conference, if not entirely in Parliament yet, by a hard right faction who seem to want to destroy this country's economy with their race to the bottom.
Shadow Minister, a pleasure to speak to you this morning. That's the Shadow Business Minister, Bill Esterson, here on The Business Breakfast.